Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd bear the pain of tubulo rexus if you ruptured me with the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, with what's going on.
Hey, Tony. We've got much more from our coverage of the 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference. Congrats, you're a manager. Now what? Our panel shares advice for new managers, which can also support established leaders. They bring strategies for employee-centric growth, self and team advocacy, goal setting, coaching, building trust, and more. They are Brenna Holmes from Brenna Holmes Advisory Consulting and Carrie Lenahan at Incubate Growth Consulting. Then, facing feedback. Donna James wants to make feedback a growth opportunity for both giver and receiver. She has ways to make feedback constructive for both, so you can create a culture of continuous improvement. Donna is with community-centric fundraising. On Tony's Take Two.
It's National Make-A-Will Month.
Here is, congrats, you're a manager. Now what?
Hello and welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference, where we are together in Baltimore, Maryland. Our 25 NTC coverage is sponsored by Heller Consulting, technology services for nonprofits. With me now are Brenna Holmes and Carrie Lenahan. Brenna Holmes is a principal at Brenna Holmes Advisory Consulting, aptly named. And Carrie Lenahan is the principal and founder at Incubate Growth Consulting. So, welcome. Brenna, Carrie, welcome. Welcome to Nonprofit Radio.
Thanks, Tony. Happy to be here.
Pleasure.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Your session topic is, congrats, you're a manager, now what? Let's start with you, Brenna. Why did you feel, overview of the topic. What did you talk about in your session?
Yeah, so it was a workshop, which really enabled a lot of peer learning. That was a lot of what we wanted to show the community, is that you don't have to go this alone. Many managers are promoted because they're wonderful individual contributors, and they don't get any management training when they become a manager. So they have to balance and figure out kind of on their own, and feel very isolated often, how to balance their old duties with their new duties and support their team to really coach them to success.
Okay. So why don't we, let's start with some wisdom, Carrie. Yeah. Why don't you start off with advice for new leaders?
Oh, gosh. I would say, you know, we learned in our workshop that 70% of people receive no training at their organization on how to manage their teams. And so, as Brenna said, you're not alone. There are plenty of great resources out there and people who could help. I would recommend go to your manager, go to your HR team, and ask them for some best practices and some training and their advice on how to get started.
Okay. Or if you're a smaller shop, you maybe like to outsource, the HR function is outsourced. Mm-hmm. You know, you could ask that consulting team or that agency, or...
Definitely.
I don't know. I feel like we're kind of at a loss. I mean, 70% don't get any training.
It's, yeah.
Like, on Friday, you weren't leading, managing anyone, and now on Monday, you are.
Right.
Now you're in charge of, let's say, a small team, like 3-4 people.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's not huge, but it, your responsibilities are enormously different on Monday than they were on Friday.
Yeah.
Well, give us some more help in our transition.
Yeah, so I think one of the first things is to set expectations with your supervisor around what the goals are for that team. whether it's one person or five people, if you don't have clear expectations for the roles and responsibilities, not only for yourself, but each of those team members, people are just going to make assumptions and fill in the gaps on their own, which is usually going to lead to some sort of upsetness.
Or misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding, right? at the very least.
Misalignment.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. Right. And generally, you want to also do a listening tour. Maybe you knew those people as peers before. Maybe you didn't. But schedule some time one-on-one to have some conversations with them around how they view their day-to-day, what their understanding is of their job duties, their expectations, or what their frustrations are, what their points of happiness are, and figure out what those, or align your goals with the team, for the team and the department, with what their strengths are, as much as you can, right? So be that way, you're going to get them engaged, and not just feel like they're widget makers in the drudgery of the day-to-day.
What about the potential awkwardness? Suppose they were your peers on Friday, and now you're managing them. It's awkward. I mean,
yeah.
They've told you things as a friend, a work friend, that maybe they might not have shared if they knew you were going to be their boss on Monday. How do you overcome that new relationship awkwardness?
Yeah, I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think it really is.
Just be honest. I don't know, Kerry.
I'll jump in. A huge part of leadership is building trust with your team, and I think that trust you build with people exists whether you're a peer or whether you're in a position of management and leadership. And I think keeping people's confidence when that's necessary is really helpful. And as Brenda said, setting expectations of what your new role is, what their role is, but really creating those clear guidelines and maintaining that trust, just as you would if they were your personal friend or they were your peer before.
Okay. What about the, I don't know, imagining myself in a role I'll never take, because I would be a terrible employee. Nobody would ever hire me. I'd show up late for the interview just to prove that I could, you know.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, I would be a bad employee. Thankfully, I have my own business, so I don't need others' employment. So I envision myself it's Monday morning now. Like, what's the welcome? Like, how do I need to give a speech to the troops? You know, my new team of three or four. We're all in this together, I'm gonna do my best to, you know, be vulnerable. No, I don't. You don't say that. Obviously, you demonstrate it. You don't say it, but
yeah.
You know, do I need to give a speech to the troops Monday morning?
I think one of the things that comes up, and you're getting to this, is communications and setting expectations. And it's Monday morning, you walk into the room in your new role, and you haven't really gotten organized yet, and you're not starting yet. And so I think being really honest and saying where you are in the process, and as Brenda said, you know, maybe talking about saying we're going to start with goals and setting goals together,
and listening,
where they have agency. You just said it. Listening is so much more important at this moment than talking. And a book that I love is in our notes, and it's focused on asking the right questions. And so it's about not necessarily advising in the beginning, but just start by asking your team's questions related to what they need, what they see the goals need to be, where they might feel stuck in accomplishing, you know, the goals that were in front of them before.
Okay. All right, so my General MacArthur speech to the troops moment is not appropriate on day one, morning one. All right. More, you know, like, we're going to be meeting together. I'm going to meet with each of you individually. There's a lot I have to learn, right? A little humility.
Yeah,
you know,
goes a long way.
I know what's best for the team, and here's what we're going to do. That's a failure. I think that, yeah. Okay, all right. What's more, you know, principles of employee-centric growth strategies. What are some more tactics or strategies for this new manager?
Yeah, I think we've been speaking to a lot of that already, right? It is putting the employee at the center, letting them have agency over their own future with the company. There's no guarantee, no matter the tenure or seniority of an employee, that they're going to stay. right? So it really is about helping align their goals with the team goals, with the organization's goals, so that people see a mutually beneficial future together.
Okay. Yeah. Exploring like your own professional development goals. You know, maybe someday you'd like to be in my role as the manager.
Right.
Or maybe you wouldn't.
Right.
Some people don't want to lead others and manage. They don't want that headache.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, what else?
Were there any other principles you wanted to share, Carrie?
You know, I think touching on one thing that we spent a lot of time on in the workshop was all of a sudden, as an individual contributor, you're project managing yourself and the day you know where you're heading for a goal and you're doing your day-to-day tasks. All of a sudden you're a manager and now you're managing a team who has goals and are all individually doing different tasks. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time about the importance of managing your team to outcomes versus trying to micromanage the individual tasks that all of your team members are doing. Yeah. So spending a lot of time making sure everyone's clear on goals, clear on a general path on how to get there, timelines, milestones, expectations, but then stepping back and giving your team the space to do the work was a topic we spent a lot of time on that was really important to the people in the room.
So let's flesh some of that out. How do you align the individual tasks with the overall team goals?
So a lot of times it's really about making sure that there's ownership from your team members on different parts of the tasks, right? So so some people might be, let's say you're in a fundraising team and you have people who are focused on acquisition versus people who are focused on retention. You might have an individual, you might have a team goal of raising, say, $1 million that year. And each team member might have a part of that goal, which might be revenue and a set of relationships that they're managing. So it's making sure that they're clear on, I would say, the sub goals and giving them some general direction, but letting them really drive the tasks to achieve those goals. And just checking in, making sure things are on track and that you feel comfortable, but not getting into like, let me see that email before you send it out.
Right.
Micromanagement. Well, yeah.
Yeah. And we, because a lot of the people in the room self-identified as being promoted from within versus being an external management hire, I noticed a lot of the groups talking about how to regulate yourself as the manager to let go of the things that you used to have ownership over and be very, very good at, right? Because often we get very protective of those things because I did it great, I did it my way, and maybe you should do that too. It's not always the right approach, right? So that's where you fall into a bit of a micromanagement trap. If you can't just let that go and, you know, learn strategic delegation of the different tasks, that even if it doesn't happen exactly around the same course that you would have taken before, it still achieves that outcome that everybody's agreed to.
You're also giving a team member or members agency.
Exactly.
And what'd you call it? Strategic delegation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're recognizing that, you know, I'm not the only person on this team who can do this.
Right.
Here's your authority to proceed.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What else? I mean, we only spent like 12 minutes together. Come on. You did a 90-minute session, right? Or an hour session.
Hour session. Yep.
What else came out? What else did you teach folks or share with folks?
Well, so, the beautiful thing about it was a workshop, so there was a lot of peer learning. Carrie and I got to float around 8 different super engaged groups and then listen as they reported back out. But one of the other topics that came up both in the quiz or like poll that we asked them to share about what they were interested in and then in organically in the conversations was the difference between coaching and correcting. Zakiya, who wasn't able to join us for the radio spot today, but she shared her personal experience at Animal Legal Defense Fund, and she had that exact, you know, I'm the direct response fundraising manager and I'm really good at that, managing vendor relationships but never individual people. Until she had to manage individual people. And she got a person who had been with the organization for a while and already had some marks against them in their performance record. So she had to learn very early on how to correct while not getting, you know, becoming defensive herself or causing them to become defensive. And then the value of coaching to uplift and get them to solve their own problems versus having to dictate and correct in a very explicit manner. And Carrie had a really great note from the IFC around like what the definition of coaching itself is.
Yeah, you know, I think the word coaching today is used so broadly that it almost has no meaning in a lot of spaces. And so the International Coaching Federation, one of the examples they use if you go through any of their courses on what coaching is, you know, you're consulting or you're being corrective in a space where you have the answers and people are asking you the questions. That's consulting. Coaching is when you are asking questions because you recognize that the power of the team, the collective knowledge of the team, or the individuals in front of you have the answers within them or are very capable of finding those answers for themselves. And that's something that as a manager and a leader, you really want to do to empower your team. You know, one of the traps when you become a manager is people will look to you for approval. People will look to you. They want you to tell them what to do to some degree. But the trap in that is you create this dependency where now people feel like, oh, I can't do anything without your permission or unless you tell me it's okay.
Like the email that Brenna said, you know, I can't send this email before it's approved.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what it would eventually become.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I love that distinction between coaching. I've never thought of that. Coaching and consulting. Consultants more have the answers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And coaching is more helping the person or the team find the answers themselves.
Exactly. Like, and your job as a leader is to empower your team. It's the collective power of the team is so much more capable than if you are just telling people to go do tasks all day. Mm-hmm. Also takes an incredible lot of time and puts a lot of pressure on you individually.
Yeah. No, it sounds unsustainable.
Totally.
Yeah. Right. And detrimental to the team. All right. Awesome. What did you learn? It was a workshop. So as you were patrolling the tables, not patrolling, as you were surveying the various groups, what did you all both come away with?
Yeah, one of the biggest ones that I did was that people are really focused on the generational shifts that are happening right now. And I try to actually be less focused on that and more focused on who the individual people are in my own coaching practices with my clients. And so having to talk with each of the different groups around making sure that we are not projecting our own preconceived notions of a generation or a type of people, right? Stereotyping in so many ways, which often happens subconsciously, is also a big part of being a good manager, because you can't expect everyone on the team to have the same work style, the same learning style, to perceive and project the same level of investment. That word came up a lot, is that this new generation doesn't seem as invested in the mission.
I had a panel on this yesterday.
Yeah.
They're pretty much 5 o'clock. You know, my work is done.
Right.
Gen Z, we were talking specifically about Gen Z. Zoomers, I learned. I didn't know that yeah. word. It was Zoomers to Boomers is what we... Maybe I should call that panel that. Zoomers to Boomers.
That's a good one.
Okay.
But even within those generations, or people, like, personally, my life is not just my work, right? I have many facets to my personality and other things that I enjoy. I'm very passionate about my work, but it's not the end all be all. I'm very conscious of boundaries. I very much protect my social life, my private life, and my time for that, and have always, with client relationships and staff relationships, made sure that I walk the walk and not just tell them to do things that I don't do personally, right? So making sure that you're not responding to emails in the middle of the night or sending them out at odd hours on the weekends, that even if your subject line or your email signature, which is becoming more common now, says, you know, when I send this does not dictate when you should respond, there is a subconscious nudge that the recipient says, well, but my boss is working now, maybe I should be too.
Yeah.
So I'm a much bigger proponent of, you know, doing the scheduled send, using technology to help us take the onus off the recipient because we don't know how they're going to react, how they're going to perceive our intentions, and be more conscious about how we make those actions.
Yeah, a little 9-to-5 send, and I know that's Microsoft. It's in Office.
You can do it in Google. You can do it in any email tool from your phone or your desktop. Yeah, that's very simple now. Yeah. Okay. And you can pick your time, so time zones also come into play. But I think it's important for the leaders and the managers themselves of people, whether, again, it's one person or six or 14, to not put the onus on those recipients to ensure that, like, to assume that they're going to read my intentions correctly.
Right, or even read this. Yeah.
Literally read
the part that says you don't have to respond just because I sent it now.
Right, exactly.
But still, you're the boss.
Right.
And right, to your point, she's working, maybe I should be too. Carrie, what did you take away? What come away learning?
Well, first of all, I think the room was full. And
good.
And there were so many people. Everyone was there is really committed to being a great leader and a great manager. They care about their people. They care about the organizations they work for. And that's a great starting point. And I think so many people after our session came up and were saying, you know, where can I get training? Or I know you put some resources in the notes, but how do I do this in a way that I know I'm doing it effectively? Mm-hmm. And so there was a real hunger for more information and for more training in this space on how to lead and manage effectively.
Okay. Is that resource something you can share with listeners? Can you email that to me and I'll
put
the
absolutely.
Link? It's a shared doc, I guess.
I would. It's the NTC Collaborative Notes doc, so I'm sure they'd be willing to say that.
Please?
Yep, happy to.
Who's going to take responsibility for this?
I'll do that.
You'll do that?
Yeah.
Okay. I know that's good because I know I have your email.
You do.
So if you don't do it, I know I can follow
up. You can follow up.
Okay. All right, I'm putting my notes right now. Brenna Resource. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll share that with listeners. Good. You know, support. Like, the managers need support. They also need to be supporting their team.
Yes, exactly. You play a little bit of a therapy role, right? Like, being there as a confidant for both men, you know, people of similar peer group in the organization, as well as your individual team members.
Confidant. That goes to the trust that you talk about, Carrie.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Breach somebody's confidence once,
right,
and then it'll be all over. It'll be all over the office. You're not a trustworthy person,
right?
Forget about it. You may as well change jobs.
Have to have your team's back at all times. And sometimes that's hard if there's moments where you might not be on the same page as your team member, but you have that moment where you don't have their back and it's obvious and that trust goes away.
Is an opportunity where, you know, someone says something in confidence and then you can say, can I share this? You know, get their consent. Maybe they came to you not wanting you to share, but if you can help them see, help them recognize that change is really only going to happen if I can share it. Can I share it anonymously, maybe? You know, a team member came to me and shared this. Hopefully, it's not something that would be identifiable to that person, you know. But to get their consent to share it anonymously or otherwise, because that's really the only way I can help make a change.
Right.
But you know, at least you're offering. Mm-hmm. They may say no. Don't share. And then of course you don't. But at least you're offering that level of support, like to elevate their voice and their concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I mean, managers have the opportunity to translate that feedback that is shared with them to level it up to their own supervisors, even if they're not sharing, like, the specific anecdote, right? And I think that is a level of responsibility that the managers have, is to be that professional communicator in between the people they manage and the higher ups. So depending on what level of mid-level management you are, that could be the CEO suite, and making sure that there are like really strong professional development paths for your team, acting as an advocate for your team. Or there could be more layers between you and them, right? But that is a huge role of an effective manager, is making sure that you are that voice for their issues, their concerns, which are yours. because the buck stops here with you, and everything, no matter who on the team is quote unquote responsible for each individual thing, it all rolls up to you. So that came up a lot in the conversation yesterday, is around how maybe you weren't in a communications-esque role before. You know, you're a developer, you're an engineer, you're a designer, and having to become that communicator so that you can be the advocate for your team, as well as being able to tell the corporate policies in an appropriate way to in the other direction is critical.
Okay. All right, Carrie, why don't you leave us with some parting thoughts about for new leaders, encouragement for new leaders.
Yeah. As we said before, you're not alone. Find a peer group. Find a few formal or informal mentors that you can bounce ideas off of, that you can check in with, mm-hmm. and really check yourself. I think that is one thing that will help you. I will also say, like, taken straight from Brené Brown's book about, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the levels of our systems. Set up systems for yourself that make it easy to manage. Things like standing agendas for your weekly meetings, 90-day check-ins with your team members where you get to go deep with them on how they're performing and where they need help and what's going really well. Setting up those systems will make your life a lot easier and also create consistent expectations for your team members. So I think those are two things that you can do as a new manager to just get off on a confident and good foot.
Thank you. Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
My pleasure. They are Brenna Holmes, principal at Brenna Holmes Advisory Consulting, and Carrie Lenahan, principal and founder at Incubate Growth Consulting. Cool. Brenna, Carrie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 25 NTC, where our coverage is sponsored by Heller Consulting, technology services for nonprofits.
It's time for Tony's Take Two.
Thank you, Kate. It's the august month of August, and that can only mean one thing. Everyone knows it's National Make-A-Will Month. You know that wills are fundamental, foundational to the work that I do, planned giving fundraising. So how could we not be celebrating this august month when the national fever is obvious in the streets? The revelry, the celebrations. I'm concerned that the nation is going to peak too soon with all the revelry, with all the commotion that's going on, because this is a 31-day month. We're only a couple weeks in. This is coming out only the second week. So please pace yourself. Take your time as you're celebrating National Make-A-Will Month. Actually, it might even be a good idea to have a buddy, so that if you get carried away, your buddy, your designated driver, so to speak, right? They can bring you back down to earth, calm you, remind you that there are weeks left of National Make-A-Will Month. So I don't want you to peak too soon. Take your time. I'll share what I've been doing on LinkedIn is sharing my 18 reasons why wills are the way to launch your planned giving fundraising at your nonprofit. So I certainly can't do all 18 in one show. That's just too much. And plus, we have to space them out so that you pace yourself. Only a couple at a time. So, like, I'll only give number one. The number one reason why wills are the way to launch planned giving fundraising at your nonprofit, because they are the most popular planned gift by far. You'll see at least 75%, maybe as much as 90% of all the gifts in your complete planned giving program are going to be simple gifts in wills. They're the low-hanging fruit. So that's the number one reason. I'm not going to be able to do all 18 reasons, you know, throughout the month of this show, because it's just, you know, it gets a little laborious. But you can read them if you follow me on LinkedIn. I'll be doing them throughout the month there on my LinkedIn page. And National Make-A-Will Month, the August month of August. Please, pace yourself. Don't get carried away. That is Tony's Take Two. Kate?
I was getting excited towards the beginning because you were saying, oh, you know what this month is. And I'm like, it's the month I get to go to my uncle's beach house. I'm still excited for Make-A-Will month, but I'm kind of excited to go to my uncle's beach house.
Okay. Well, it's those are difficult priorities to balance. We all have our crosses to bear. They're both revelatory, celebratory. You know, the commotion in the streets. I mean, I see it on my street. You know, it's apparent. It's apparent. So I can understand your conundrum about which is deserves more celebration. More.
Are you celebrating? Are you like getting ready, the house ready, and?
Yeah, I'll be celebrating when you leave. That'll be actually my celebration. So, no, I'm looking forward to you all coming down. Of course, I look forward to it every year. No, I actually clean the house after you leave. Because you bring two dogs. Now you got two dogs coming instead of just one.
Dogs, that's so exciting.
It's twice the fur and make sure it's twice the number of legs that have to be kept off my sofas.
Yeah, we are trying to teach him, you know, down.
Yes, good. Off, down. Don't even get started. Not even off. It shouldn't even be off because off suggests that he's already on.
Right.
It's Curtis. We don't want Curtis on. So not just off. Off is not good enough. It should be no.
No. Yeah, that's a big one.
Okay.
Well, we've got buku buttloads more time. Here is Facing Feedback.
Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, my guest loves Podfather.
I do. I love it.
Welcome to our 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference coverage. We are sponsored here by Heller Consulting, technology services for nonprofits. The guest that loves the Podfather thing is Donna James, systems design and engagement strategist at Community Centric Fundraising. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Absolutely. Your session topic is Facing Feedback, Adventures in Emotional Capacity.
Yes.
Give me an overview of what you covered in your session.
Yeah, it was wonderful. You know, I try to give folks some tools, some real like meat and potatoes of the meal. But feedback is such a heavy thing sometimes. I open it up with, someone told me once that the four most hateful words in the English language are, we need to talk. And the work spin of that is, I have feedback for you. Okay. So I ask people just how they feel first when they hear that. And then we walk through, like, there are true tried and tested frameworks. There's language that's being shared across the sector now to really, I guess like standardize is maybe a word, but I would say like ground us so that we are having the same conversation when we use these words. So I give folks a real overview of a solid feedback loop and those steps. And then I try to talk about the weight of it because to your point, it is heavy to receive, but it's also really vulnerable to give feedback. And that human experience is where the real work is. And that I think I got hip to real early in my career was like, how we work together sometimes feels a lot more the topic that we need to be having versus like what we're doing.
Is that because you were a troublesome employee?
I think it's more like I'm a musician.
You heard that a lot. I have feedback for you. Did you get that a lot?
I think it was because I noticed people didn't like it. Like I grew up singing. I went to Berklee College of Music. I work there well still.
Boston.
Yes, in Boston.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So I'm like oriented to this true, what I think is like the artist instinct of this call and response. And so for me, I was always that person who was like, can we get
quarterly evals? Can we talk about it this week? Like, how do you think I'm doing this week? And I, you know, to her credit, I had this wonderful boss, was one of my first bosses who felt the same way. And we were sort of the weirdos. And I don't know. I've always sort of been interested in how the audience is receiving. I've always been grounded in that. And that's probably because I'm used to holding the microphone and looking at their souls and hope that we're connecting. And so for me, it feels so natural. But to find that it's something that feels so, you know, it can be anxiety ridden for so many people. It can feel like absolutely. Such a stopping point. And I think I got very passionate about helping that, because I've always worked with teams that, like, I look around and they're so talented and I know the answers are in this room. And to see collaboration sort of stagnated, or you know, that boss called them bubble ups. Bubble ups are happening, but there weren't always workflows to deal with that, right? There wasn't always a framework or a leader in the room who was like, okay, let's dig into this. Conflict feels like a dirty word. And for me, no, dissonance is the story, right? That's how we get to resolve. We have to have that dissonance. We have to have it. And in it is the good, juicy story that's going to make us inspired, make us keep going. And it's an opportunity.
Well, this is all excellent. All right. We're going to have some fun with this. I can tell. All right. Because part of, the emotional capacity. Interesting. Your music background, mm-hmm. resonating with the audience, like looking to their soul. Mm-hmm. How am I being received? How is this performance being received?
Yeah.
So how is this feedback being received? Mm-hmm. All right. How about we start with the giver of the feedback?
Yeah.
This is a weight, mm-hmm. right? I mean, for that person as well, we need to recognize.
Absolutely.
It's not very few people. I believe people are generally good, so I think very few people take pleasure in giving the feedback. Mm-hmm. That's critical.
Mm-hmm.
How can we, as the giver, help ourselves and eventually, and then we'll get to helping the recipient.
Right? Yeah.
Because, how can we be helping ourselves and be helping the recipient? Because then we'll talk about what the recipient needs to do to help themselves.
Yeah.
All right. So
absolutely.
What can we do as the giver of this important but difficult to convey message?
Absolutely. I think first is like accepting that it's going to feel vulnerable. I think sometimes, especially for those of us who've been in management positions for a long time, they're sort of like, I should be able to do this. But like, for me, the practice of feedback should feel vulnerable, because when you are vulnerable, you're connecting, right? If you're vulnerable, you're open to receive those signals from the other person, to think about how it's landing with them. If you're not feeling vulnerable, you're probably not doing feedback. You're probably like commenting. You're probably not connecting. And if there isn't that two-way, then for me, that's not the best kind of feedback, right? That's more evaluative critique. And I don't necessarily consider it the same thing.
Okay, we acknowledge that you're a human being.
You're a human being. Spoiler alert.
if you feel vulnerable about this, if you're feeling empathy to the person you're about to have a conversation with,
you're in a good spot.
You are. Okay.
You're in a good spot. And like, there's feedback in feedback. You can ask someone how they receive feedback. I have a lovely little graphic that I share that actually an audience member contributed from a previous session, and now I've incorporated it, but it's the feedback cookies, right? We talk about the feedback sandwich a lot. The sandwich's cover has been blown. Like, we all see it coming. It's over. The feedback sandwich of good. They say to say something good, something affirming, and then you give the critique in the middle, and then you end it with another affirming.
Good and a positive. Oh, okay.
Right. And like, that is done, but it's such a frame that I think people lock into so easy that like you can smell it coming. You're just like, okay, what are you trying to like hide in the sandwich?
Right,
you know,
right,
what is that? Just say the thing. This piece, and her name is Liz, and I can't remember the last name for the life of me, but there are like 9 or 10 cookies, and it's like a black and white cookie. Like, give me the good and the bad, or like, give me dough. Like, just say it. Unfiltered. Give me the things. Is it a macaron where you want like elegant wording and like some good meaty like critical information in the middle, and just giving folks a chance to define and like advise you on how to work with them is something that not everybody has had the experience to do, but it works really well, because then that person who's receiving the feedback knows when to expect it. I feel like we have such a deep relationship with anxiety nowadays that like
just allowing people to understand when like the workflow is going to happen and having it be familiar does so much to allow them to receive the feedback as well.
The 10 cookies. Can we work in some of the Christmas ones? Like, sure. I like the one that's filled with the jam.
Yeah, you can make your own cookie.
It's got that lump. Or the one with the chocolate kiss in it.
Big fan.
The pinoli nuts. The pinoli nuts cookies.
Now I'm going to need cookies,
Tony. Can we work those in?
Yes.
Are they in our... I don't know if they're in there.
They're not in there,
they're in,
but...
They're in this framework.
One of the people asked yesterday, they were like, sometimes every cookie, I'm different, you know, every day.
All right, I'd like to see the holiday cookie assortment.
I like it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, maybe when you're in the Christmas spirit, this is how you like to... this is how we like to receive it.
I have some news. What was it? I have feedback for you. Okay. Take it with this pinoli nut cookie.
I did tell the presentation yesterday, like, bonus points for the managers who bring these types of cookies and let the people pick them out and then keep the cookie. That's bonus if you want to do that.
All right. Any more from the giver's perspective? Well, what can we do to go beyond just... the empathy that we feel.
Yeah.
So before we get to the recipient, what that person should be doing to take care of themselves, what can we do as the donor? I don't know. We're not really we're not really donating constructive feedback, but we're the giver. We're the speaker.
Yeah.
What can we do to help the person we're about to have a conversation with?
Yeah. I think particularly like in this kind of dynamic where we're obviously talking about somebody who either has like managerial oversight over the person or the project or something like that.
Right.
So in that way, like really grounding it on like, what is the goal? What are we working toward together here? So that collaborative spirit and like knowing that this conversation is grounded in this and this only, like this is an intentional conversation. This is not your whole year's evaluative, right, moment.
Keep things in context.
Context is key, right? And again, like letting people know, I do think making sure that if you are giving feedback and it's only critical, right, that's going to make it challenging to give feedback in the future. For those of us that are managers, making sure that you are giving an overwhelming amount of like affirming feedback or like, I appreciate when you do this, or I really noticed that, or I want to celebrate you for this, that can help people have a better experience and relationship to feedback in general, right? I think that's the biggest sort of call to action that I have for all of us is like work on your relationship with feedback, regardless of your precisionality, regardless of how often you work with it. For me, feedback can manifest in the individual relationships, but it's also about our programming, right? Everybody at this space is working on things and hoping that the audiences and the constituents they serve are like appreciating that effort. But often we try to get things into such a perfect place that we don't open ourselves up to allow them to have like collaborative insight and ownership in the experience. So in that way, if we're talking with groups, letting people process the feedback together, share and dialogue about how they are receiving it, because the way I receive your feedback, if it's about a general thing, not me, right, might be very different than the way the person next to us receives it and sees the insights in it. So really pulling it out and making it like a creative project. Like, why not?
Yeah.
It's just relationship building. We're just calling it feedback.
And we're all here for the same goal.
We
all work for the same mission.
Yeah. I want you to like it too.
Right. All right. Let's switch then to the recipient.
Mm.
Okay, we've just heard the words.
Yeah.
I have feedback for you.
Yeah.
Your heart sinks.
Like, oh, no.
We internalize, we personalize.
We do.
Mistakes. You're going to take responsibility, assuming the conversation is appropriately placed.
Yeah,
let's assume that we got the right...
Yes, let's assume we have the right person delivering.
Yeah.
They've done their work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what are we? How can we take care of ourselves?
Yeah, one of the things I highlight for folks in this session is I believe there are like barriers to day-to-day feedback practice. Some of those are defensiveness, perfectionism, quantity over quality, right? These are familiar things, but in particular, our defensiveness spikes super hard.
Oh yeah.
Right. So what can you do, and how are you working on your awareness with, like, what you bring to the table? Right, I'm curious about what people have to offer me because there's nothing you can say that's going to take away what I know I have, you know? And most folks are working on something, right? I would hope that when you're offering someone specific feedback about the way that they work, it's probably in line with a goal that they shared with you if you're a manager, right? Maybe I say, you know, this year I'm really wanting to work on the relationships I have around the office so that I can be more collaborative. right? If I'm going to get feedback about that later, then that feels helpful. You're helping me with my goal. And in that way, we're co-creating this like work experience together. And it feels a little bit more intentional and a little bit more about us and our careers and our relationships and our communities, and less about like the numbers and the metrics and things like that. It makes it real. We are so mission aligned in this sector, right? It's personal, whether or not we want it to be at some point. It's deeply meaningful work for us. So it's hard to separate that out. So to own that there is a personal attachment and that it is really meaningful and allowing it can let us come at it from a more authentic place, I think.
You and I are assuming that the giver of this information is doing it humanely.
Yes.
Suppose it's not. Suppose it's more antagonistic.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe even threatening, mm-hmm. but if not threatening, yeah. Just, you know, it's inhumanly, you know, being conveyed.
but
it's being done harshly.
Yes.
Harshly, maybe condescending.
I call that this feelings forward feedback.
Okay.
Especially
now,
I'm getting it.
The person talking to me now is condescending, mm-hmm. and harsh. Mm-hmm. What do I do?
I guess it depends on the situation, right? For those of us who are doing this with like programs, if it's like the audience, right? Maybe our community is like, I don't know why you're doing things like this. Y'all are not being helpful. I know you're supposed to be here to be helping us. You're not being helpful. I don't like it. I hate you. Right? We don't want that. We don't want to hear that. But I believe that every engagement is a bit of feedback, right? And even if it is feelings forward, there's something underneath it. So when we're dealing with someone that like we are responsible for, you know, I'm highlighting that power dynamic of like, are we the org and they're the audience, they're the community. It's our responsibility to be more curious, right? People are going to have feelings. Not everybody's going to be a feedback practitioner, right? Your manager may not be a feedback practitioner. This may not be something that they have really leaned into. It may be an area where they could grow. Whether or not you have the kind of relationship where you can offer feedback to your manager is something that may or may not be realistic. Obviously, we would hope for that as an ideal. But I think the most important thing that folks can do is remember that feedback offered, it's your prerogative and it's your artistry to decide what feedback you're going to receive, what is useful for you, and how you can apply it for your ultimate goals, right? Sometimes we're getting feedback that, you know, if someone says to me like, hey, I really think that you should dress a little bit more subtle. I think that you'll blend in a little bit better here. Well, that has never been my goal, Tony. My goal has never been to fit in. It's also never been realistic. She's loud. She's an artist. She loves to make a noise. Like, it's just not going to jive with me.
She's got a bold blue jacket on. I would say a royal blue. Pretty much a royal blue.
I do love this color.
And also watermelon fingernails, which I thought also looked like Christmas trees.
You like it?
Yeah.
Maybe I was channeling you a little bit.
It could be Christmas, but it's watermelon. I knew it wasn't Christmas, but they're watermelon fingernails. All right. So, but we also, you know, we want to, I think subsumed in what you're saying is we want to be able to understand what's being told to us.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's not coming through because it's there's this harshness and rhetoric and condescension, you know, I just don't understand what you're what we're trying to get to or what you're trying to convey. Yeah. I don't have a full understanding of what it is I need to do differently to support the team.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to pull out of this to shift. I think a ton of us have been in that position too. I would say like that it's always going to be curiosity, right? I'm curious about what you're trying to get at. I'm really curious. I really want to figure it out. And in that way, we might have to get good at asking questions and managing up. And I think that's realistic for a lot of us. You know, I think there was a wonderful session here, not to keep shouting out all the wonderful sessions that have been happening, but there was one yesterday around things I wish I knew before I became a people manager. And like, it's a lot to be in a management position, to know that these folks are impacted by the way that you navigate. Even if you don't mean it, they're reacting to the way that you model, right? It's such a deep responsibility to be a people manager. And I don't know that everyone approaches climbing a corporate ladder or a nonprofit ladder or your consulting growth or whatever it is aware of that. But our collaboration is such a big part of no matter how we work, collaboration is there. So if you don't have a comfort with this feedback how can we build a shared culture together, call and response rhythm, I guess. It's going to get in your way no matter what, no matter how you work. You can't move around the workforce in any way and get away from working with people. That's just, we're all we have, Tony. We're all we have.
I appreciated what you said. Nothing you can say is going to take away anything that I know I have.
Yeah. And that's that work, right? I don't say that lightly, yeah. Right? She's still on her journey.
Yeah,
we're all going to do it. But hopefully you have that community around you who can mirror back to you how they see you. You know, we have to be developing feedback loops everywhere in our personal lives. We should have that sense of belonging in our life to come back to, because to your point, someone's gonna come at you sideways and like, you get to be mad, right? Whether or not you blow up in the office, I'm gonna say no, that's not a tip that I'm gonna offer, but like, you get to have feelings. You're a person, right? You get to process it, you get to feel some way about it, and then you get to come back to the table and figure out like, how am I gonna get to like what's really helpful in what was offered? How am I gonna apply it to benefit me and my growth and these projects that I care so much about?
You have some stories? You got a story you can share? Yeah, didn't your session description said you had stories?
I give folks reflection around when I pointed out the barriers to day-to-day feedback. I always ask the audience because, you know, we trend this way and that way.
Oh,
we're in a different year.
Audience stories. Okay.
I ask them to reflect on like these barrier things. And I ask them like, where do you recognize perfectionism, defensiveness, quality over quantity, either or thinking? Because often these are the things that stop us from receiving feedback. We dismiss it. And we have to be really, really careful whose feedback we're dismissing and why. And so I ask them like, do you recognize these from anything else? And I want to give super props to N10 because this space, half the room shouted in unison, these are the tenets of white supremacy culture. Like they were so aware. And that work and that like the pattern of these popping up and realizing that they're such human experiences is such deep work. So I always ask folks, are there any of these that you don't recognize? And then we dive into stories of how we've seen these things pop up in our work and how kind of funny it can be, because it feels so obvious when we're all sitting together in reflection mode. But when you're working, right, often sense of urgency pops up in nonprofit so much, right? Because these are really inherent needs, right?
Yeah, like we're doing real urgent work times.
Especially now.
To change the world. Yeah.
So we'll talk about, you know, ways we've seen good intentions show up in ways that are just sometimes, frankly, hilarious. You know, folks showing up with items or goods, thinking that this is the answer and this is what you need, and now your capacity is a little bit more drained because you've got a piano and 7 broken guitars, and someone at the staff has to do something with them. You know. There's such a way that these things pop up. And if we can, for me, what I try to do is like, you know, have your little Joker moment, laugh a little bit. You get to, okay. You have to. And if you can bring humor to the ways that we are so humanly fallible, like, can we all enjoy this together? This sitcom's hilarious. Like we're just meat sacks of emotion clanging up against each other, trying to make the world better. And if we can bring some of that presence to it, like people are joy. People are generous. People are fascinating. And maybe that's just kind of why I've ended up doing the kind of work that I do. But, you know, an artist is curious. The musicians want to name what's going on under the surface. And there's so much under the surface when we are all really dedicated to good work. It's personal, like we said.
That's a beautiful place to leave.
Thank you. All right.
Donna James. If you want to connect with Donna on LinkedIn, she spells her first name D-A-N-A. Donna James, systems design and engagement strategist at Community Centric Fundraising. Thank you for sharing, Donna.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate you.
Great topic. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference. Our coverage is sponsored by Heller Consulting.
Next week, inclusive and engaging virtual meetings. And RFP, Request for Partnership. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out there and be great.